This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown and Mike Somich on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hey, it is Ready, Set, Bet here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. I'm Matt Brown, Mike Somich. Boy, do we have a great show for you here on a Saturday. Mike, I know you. What is this? Is this Christmas Eve for you? What is post-draw day? Where does that sit?
I mean, it's pretty high up. But you do have a week to wait. Like Christmas Eve, there's instant gratification, right? Because the next morning you wake up, you open some presents. The Kentucky Derby, to me, is kind of like the Super Bowl a little bit. So this is like when the props get released for the Super Bowl. Now you have all this information that you need to digest, and then you will talk about it endlessly for a full week before you get 2 minutes that matter, right? And that's much like the Super Bowl, where we get all of this information, and then 2 weeks later you get a three-hour game that decides all of it. So very important day. I do think this is one of the more important Kentucky Derby draws that we have had in recent memory, because I think there's seven or eight legitimate contenders, and I think there is not one standout. There are a bunch of forces here that need to be in the right place in the gate to be able to win.
And so we will talk that. Also, Danny Moses is going to join us right after the draw happens. We'll get his opinion on all of that. We got two different Haltermans joining us here on the show today. Eric to talk Major League Baseball. Aaron to talk hockey and horses as well. And, of course, we'll get into all of our thoughts on the NFL draft, which, Somich, I thought it was all doom and gloom. And then they called Chris Johnson as the second corner taken. And out of nowhere, like a phoenix rising from the ashes, I didn't have a disaster of a draft after all, but we'll get into all of that as well. But you know, the playoffs are rolling on right now. And as we look at this, Mike, you get a Celtics team 108-100 over the 76ers. Tatum and Brown each go for over 20 points there in that one. It was a game in which, again, like I know a lot of people were talking about how dominant the Celtics were going to be, or they thought that they were going to be. It was a good win. A win is a win is a win. You move on. You get the series to 2-1, but I don't know, man. It's not, I guess it's not the dominant Celtics team that I assumed we were going to see here early on.
Yeah, look, no Embiid. Paul George is a shell of what he used to be. It's really Maxey and Edgecombe here for the 76ers. I thought the Celtics were just going to blow them out. It felt like the way that they were playing heading into the playoffs, this was a Celtics team that was going to exert their will on this 76ers team, and they just haven't through three games of this series. You mentioned it's 2-1. It could easily be 2-1 the other way. Philly was very much in this game heading into the fourth quarter, and you saw the Celtics just kind of able to take care of business there. Now we head to game four. Boston is winning, but they're not winning. They're not really just saying, okay, we are the better team. We're going to blow you out. We're going to get some rest here and head into the second round. You got to think you're going to get a better Celtics effort, because I don't think this has been Philly playing exceptional basketball. I think this is Boston underperforming through three games.
The game of the night, Lakers and the Rockets. Lakers down 6 late, get it to overtime, and then win 112-108 there. LeBron James, 29 points, 13 boards, 6 assists. And I made a comment on the Twitter machine, Mike Somich, that it kind of proved my point, which was, I was like, listen, there's no more words to say about LeBron James and what he's doing at 41 years old. If you have anything to say other than that, then you're just a hater. And what do I get? I get the haters come in and start talking about games from a decade ago. Yeah, well, he was in this whatever, and what about then, and all this. I'm like, then you just proved my point. You're just a hater. We're talking about a 41-year-old guy who is out there playing with guys almost literally half his age and being the best player on the court. It's unbelievable to watch what we have seen LeBron will this team to do. And oh, by the way, we said this a couple weeks ago, Mike, were we underrating this Lakers team? They are doing this without Luka and Reeves. They have a 3-0 lead without Luka and Reeves. They can sit them probably the rest of this series if they want to. It is, to me, I just can't. I know it's because you and I are on the other side of 40 here, and maybe that's why it impresses us so much, considering every day we get out of bed and something hurts on us or whatever. But how can you argue what you were watching with your own eyes right now?
he even kind of buried the lead. They were down three with 25 seconds left, and he basically strips. He tips the ball out of Reed Sheppard's hands, then gets the ball back, hits a three to tie it at 101, and that's what forces overtime in this game as well. So just making plays down the stretch against a dude who is literally drafted number three overall in the last couple of years in the NBA draft. So, like, you are taking on men who are half your age and still being able to make athletic plays against them. I'm gonna take it a different direction. Isn't this a little more of an indictment on Kevin Durant? Like, what is he doing not playing in this series? Now we've got a new injury for game three, misses game one and game two. You have LeBron out there just gutting it out with very little help. And on the other side, Kevin Durant with a much better supporting roster is like, you know what? I'm good. I got a new injury here in game three. Can't play game one and game two. It's the playoffs, man. Got to find a way to get out there.
It is. It's something else. But again, if you don't have to like LeBron as a player, if you want to, sometimes you have to give credit where credit's due. Yes, you have to give credit where credit's due. I mean, we've never seen a person play even close to this level at this advanced age in the NBA. It's just unreal. 120-108 winners are the Spurs over the Trailblazers, and they did this without Victor Wembanyama. They take a 2-1 lead there in that series. Got to feel good to get one without Wemby out there on the court.
Oh, Dylan Harper, man. He showed why he was such a high draft pick last year. Do not tick him off, because when you do, he's going to respond to it. He looked awesome last night, able to really carry the team. I think this has just been a good series. Like, I've enjoyed watching this Trailblazers team. We'll see what they decide to do in the offseason to try and improve. It looks like Scoot Henderson may not be a bust after everyone kind of wrote him off. He has been very good inside this series. Nice for the Spurs to be able to get the win without Wemby, though, because that gives you the opportunity to continue to rest him here off the concussion. No concussion protocol in the NBA, so we'll see when he comes back. But it's going to be interesting to see what the Spurs team can do if you don't have a healthy Wemby there long term.
Yeah, another monster game out of Stephon Castle as well. 33 points for him for this Spurs team. And, you know, getting this done, I know the Blazers are not anything that we're like, oh, going crazy about or anything, Mike, but to go get this win and a convincing win and to have your guys step up without Wemby out there, it does make you wonder what the ceiling is for this Spurs team. And I'm talking about not next year or the year after that. I'm talking about this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if they get Wemby back and he's healthy, and he should be. I mean, again, concussion, I would expect if they need a game five that he'll be there if it's not 3-1. But this is a team that you're now seeing Castle step up and improve in year two. You're seeing Harper step up year one. You've got Fox there. Like, this is a loaded roster. And I thought what was as impressive as anything else, without Wembanyama, this was a one-point game going to the fourth quarter. And that's when this Spurs team took over on the road in a playoff environment. And the fact that you've got young guys who could step up and do that without your best player in there speaks volumes for what the ceiling is for a team like this.
3-2 in overtime in favor of the Canadiens. In that series, they go, they are up now 2-1 in that one. The Mammoth 4-2 over the Golden Knights. They lead that series 2-1. And the Ducks put 7 into the goal. 7-4 over the Edmonton Oilers. Anaheim leads that one 2-1.
Yeah, a week ago we joked that you want to play unders, except in the Oilers and the Ducks series, and they have delivered. This game has gone, this series has gone over 6.5 every single game. We have a 7.5 total in game four, Matt Brown. 7.5 total in a playoff game. I tweeted last night, there is absolutely no defense, and I am here for it in this series. This is just up and down hockey. You see 2-on-1 after 2-on-1. Defense optional. Goaltending, meh. It is just a great offensive hockey battle. The Ducks were up 2 goals at one point in the third period, and I texted, it might as well be tied because of how the defense is. Immediately, the Oilers score, make it 5-4, go on a power play. Unable to get it done there, and the Ducks respond the other way. But it's just a fun series to watch. This is a Matt Brown series.
Yes.
You got goals, up and down action, just a lot of fun.
It's made periphery TV, just so you know. Like, it's made an ancillary television. Now, it doesn't get the sound treatment, but it's made those TVs. So that's a big step here for me, for sure. Over Major League Baseball, you remember when everyone was talking about how bad Paul Skeens was after that first start? Not even taken into context that really and truly it was just a couple of fielding errors. It wasn't that bad of a start to begin with. Yeah, perfect game into the seventh inning here in this one. And what it might have been, and it's not like necessarily because the strikeout number just jumps off the page to you or whatever, Mike, but if you were watching this, it might have been his best start in the majors. They had no chance against him. They had no clue how to hit the baseball. And now we look up in this Pirates team that – not doing a victory lap yet. It's a long, long season, but 15-11 on the year. They can pitch, man, and they added a couple of bats, and if a couple of them start coming back around, I do think it's a playoff team. I don't think it's a World Series contender necessarily, but it's definitely a playoff team, and of course Skeens at the top of that team.
Well, if they make the playoffs, they are a World Series contender because of this pitching staff. If this rotation 1-2-3 is going to pitch well, you get them in the playoffs, let's go. Let's see what happens with Skeens and Bubba Chandler. And if we have Jones back, like, this could be a very fun 1-2-3. To your point, Paul Skeens, first start, 2/3 of an inning, 67.5 ERA. Since then, the last five starts, 28.1 innings, 3 earned runs against, 0.95 ERA. He's pretty good, Matt Brown. He's pretty good.
Also, Connor Griffin hit his first home run as a big leaguer on his 20th birthday. So, yes, a 20-year-old went deep in Major League Baseball yesterday. So, everybody happy for Connor Griffin there in that one. Cincinnati Reds keep dancing through the raindrop. This might just be their season. We need to bet them right now to win the World Series. Like, so should have lost again yesterday. Find a way to win another one-run game. If you believe in regression, then you should take the under on the Reds right this second. If you are someone that thinks that you can just have a season of rainbows and unicorns, then you need to bet the Reds for the World Series right this second. This team is unbelievably lucky, but it doesn't really matter when you look up and they're one of the teams with the most wins in Major League Baseball.
The Reds and Cubs tied atop the Central at 17-9. The Cubs plus 45 run differential. The Reds minus one.
Dude,
that's all you need to know.
They should have lost like 8 more games and have figured out, like, teams have either just completely choked it away or they have had some sort of late inning heroics. It has been unbelievable to watch. That Cubs team, by the way, on a 10 game win streak as well. We are just getting started here on Ready, Set, Bet, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. VSiN Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with VSiN Pro.
To Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown and Mike Somich on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Thank you for being here with us. Of course, Sirius Channel 158, YouTube TV, VSiN Watch app, terrestrial stations across this great country of ours. Ready, Set, Bet, Matt Brown and Mike Somich. And a couple of other baseball notes before we move on to the draft here, Mike. We talked about how bad the Mets have been, and why we weren't talking about how bad the Phillies have been along the way is pretty crazy as well. 10 straight losses now for this Phillies team after a 10-game losing streak for this Mets team. Michael Harris, who has been knocking the cover off of the ball, gets scratched earlier because he has tightness in his quad, comes in, and it wins the game for the Braves. You look up and you start to look at teams with the best records in Major League Baseball, and you start and you go, okay, where are the, let's go find the Yankees. Okay, let's go find the, no, it's the Atlanta Braves. The Atlanta Braves have the best record in all Major League Baseball, 19-8 after that win yesterday, 9-1 in their last 10. They've won their last 3 as well. And Mike, I guess I'm getting pretty close to saying that I was wrong about this Braves team. Look, the resurgence of these guys that didn't hit last year obviously is a big part of all of this, but the pitching staff's been better than I thought as well, and the rest of that division has been worse than I thought. So it was just kind of the perfect storm of an opinion going bad. So I will say I'm just wrong about the Braves. I'm already going to wear it.
Well, we're early still. Let's give it some time. I mean, this is a team that struggled with injuries, struggled with consistency over the last couple of years. Let's see if they can, for 162 games, avoid those bugaboos that have bit them the last couple of years. I do have to say, I don't remember a time this early in the season where we've seen this many teams streaking. You got the Braves 9-1 in their last 10, the Cubs 10-0 in their last 10, the Reds are 8-2, the Yankees are 8-2. On the flip side, you've got the 2-8 Royals, who were supposed to be a good team. You've got the 2-8 Mets, the 0-10 Phillies. This is just a lot of streaks for early in a baseball season over the last 10 game period.
And then you go and you look at some of these teams that just are not living up to what some of the people thought. And certainly you could put the Toronto Blue Jays on that list as well. They fall to the Guardians, just a complete disaster from Scherzer in his start. 2 1/3, 7 earned, 6 hits and 3 walks. You got to wonder at what point they pull the plug on the Scherzer experiment. Like, Hall of Famer, I get it. Like, but the dude ain't got it no more.
Yeah, look, the Red Sox and the Blue Jays there down at the bottom of the East have been really disappointing. They're last and second to last right now in the division. They were your second and third choices before the season started. I have a ticket on the Blue Jays to win the division. I'm pretty close to just forgetting about it and then hoping to log in and see some cash at the end of the season if somehow this thing turns around. You mentioned Scherzer. It doesn't have it. It's over. It just maybe try the bullpen, see if you can figure out a way to go one inning at a time, and maybe he can be good again. But it doesn't look like Scherzer's going to be a legit starting pitcher. And the Red Sox, they gave up so many homers to the Orioles that the Orioles ran out of fireworks during their last series. So there's problems in Boston as well.
Yeah, it is. This baseball, though, I will say, and we said this last week, and every time we come on here, I hope I'm able to still say this confidently. Pretty excited about the way that it's breaking right now. I mean, none of these teams look, even as good as the Braves have been, they don't look dominant. And certainly we saw hot start from the Yankees. That cooled off a little bit. Yeah, still one of the better teams in baseball. But you kind of start to look up and down and think that there's some positive regression to come for at least a couple of these teams that are in the doldrums right now. I think we are going to have a very, very interesting baseball season.
We got to give a shout out to the Padres. By the way, who are leading the NL West. Like the Dodgers right now sitting in second after the Padres have gone on a run here as well. All right, to your point, if we do have positive regression, if you were betting one team to win the division right now, is it the Red Sox? Is it the Mariners? Is it the Royals, the Phillies, the Mets? All these teams right now, last or second to last their division, all with losing records. Who do you think has the opportunity to turn it around here?
Yeah, I mean, mine... So it wouldn't be a team that's last, I guess. I would go back to the Mariners, who are 12-15 right now. They're not last. The Houston Astros are last in the AL West. The pitching is just so good, and it's still good for the Mariners. They just can't hit, and that was the whole reason you and I were jumping up and down screaming from a mountaintop that this Mariners team was going to fall on a little bit of hard times. This team just doesn't hit on a consistent basis, but they don't hit this poorly. There is going to be positive regression from the batting standpoint, and the pitching staff is still arguably the best in all of baseball. So I think the bet there for me would be the Mariners. What about you?
Give me the Royals. Mm-hmm. I just think this is too bad to believe in a bad division. I'm like the Tigers. I get it. They're good, but they're not that good. This lineup has not been a murderer's row. And so with the pitching, you would assume they're going to be a little bit better than they were last year, but I'm not scared of the Tigers. I'm not scared of the Guardians, right? I'll take the Royals team with a big number attached to them that's in last in the division. Cole Reagans can't be this bad. He just can't be. Like, it's got to get better at some point there.
And we'll find out today.
You got to get better with the bats. We'll see. I would say Royals.
We'll find out today as he is on the hill there for the Royals going up against the Angels, who have cooled off from their early, I'm not even going to say heater. It was just... they were just above their ski. I mean, like, that team's just not talented.
It's a heater for the Angels. Come on, give them credit. For that level of talent, it's a heater.
Yeah, I mean, that was just, so we'll see. Because if Reagans can't go and handle this lineup, then yeah, there might be some problems there with him. Some deeper underlying issues. And we see this with pitchers from time to time, right? So we'll see how he is able to fare. We'll circle back to baseball, other things to talk about for sure. But the draft is on top of everybody's mind. And Mike Somich, listen, I said whenever I was here on Thursday that it was going to be the most boring first round ever, or one that was just absolutely wackadoodle and nothing in between, because of when there's no consensus really at any of the positions and there's no consensus take on any of the players outside of that Mendoza was going to go one, it had all the makings of like, well, I'm just going to take this guy. I'm just going to take this guy because of this, or the, I don't really like any of these dudes. Let's trade. Let's do all kinds of wacky stuff. It ended up being the latter. It was not boring at all. And it started right off the bat with pick number 3. I think it is organizational malpractice. I understand he's the best player in the draft, according to almost everybody's big board. But Mike, the number 3 overall pick is guaranteed $50 million. He's going to step onto the field as the second highest paid running back without ever playing a snap in the NFL. And oh, by the way, you have 3 different offensive linemen that graded in the low 60s, according to Pro Football Focus this past season. What what did we not learn from the Ashton Jeanty experiment last year with the Raiders? You can have an awesome player, but if you don't have enough around him to make him awesome, then it's a waste. And I think that's what's going to happen here with Arizona.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just pile on. This is just – look, the Cardinals are going to Cardinal. And that's, to me, one of the big things that you take away from this draft. Bad franchises are just going to be bad. And to your point, $54 million guaranteed money. He has the sixth highest average year value contract in the NFL of 128 running backs without ever playing a snap. He has the highest guaranteed money by $16 million over Saquon Barkley ever given to a running back. And to your point, look, you're not going to be good this year. You're not going to be good next year. So the third year of this contract, if everything goes perfect, you may get your value back. You may. Yeah. And then you all of a sudden have, what, 900 carries into the guy? And you don't know how many more years left. Even if he is great, then you're signing him to a huge contract when he's already utilized the best part of his career, and you're going to be a team that's trying to ascend, but now you're paying a running back too much. Everything you could do wrong here, you did wrong, especially considering Arvell Reese didn't get taken second. Yeah. You could have just taken him third and gotten a huge piece on your defense that you can use as an edge, that you can use as an outside linebacker. It's a terrible pick. It was by far the worst pick in the first round. And yes, I am including what the Rams did at 13.
I was going to say, you know where we're going next there on that one. And that is, of course, the Rams taking Ty Simpson at 13. Again, tip of the cap. You probably heard it all week, the last couple of days. Anyway, Chris Felica called that. I wasn't necessarily saying that they weren't going to take him, Mike Somich. I just didn't think they were going to take him at 13. That's what I didn't get. I mean, when everyone's like, okay, the Rams, like, okay, it makes sense. The Rams are in a pretty decent spot to maybe take the successor to Stafford and have him learn. And I did not think at 13, though. I did not think that that was going to be the case at all. I think that what they did was absolutely atrocious as well. Nobody else was coming after Ty Simpson. Aaron Rodgers did not give the Steelers a definitive yes or no yet. I don't think they were going to pull the trigger on Ty Simpson. It doesn't look like anybody else. I think they could have traded down 6-7 picks and still gotten Ty Simpson, if not 10 picks and still gotten Ty Simpson. So for me, I thought it was just an atrocious pick, especially when your window with Matthew Stafford is one, maybe two more seasons. You're trying to win a Super Bowl in that window, and you take a first-round pick on someone for 3 years from now.
Yeah, look, I'm going to say it's an incomplete draft. We don't know. We won't know until 3 years from now whether or not this was a good pick or not. If they win the Super Bowl this year, which is they are the current favorite, if they win it this year and he's good in 3 years, this is genius, right? This is what the Warriors were trying to do during the Steph Curry era where you hit the reset while contending. I don't agree to taking him 13. Like, this is not something Mike would have done, right? Yeah. But I'm going to go ahead. And we said with the Cardinals, it's a franchise that continues malpractice year after year. The Rams are one of the best franchises in the NFL. I know a lot about football. Sean McVay has forgotten more than I know. If they decided to take him here, I am willing to say I will trust the Rams. It's like there's a couple teams, the Rams, the Seahawks, the Eagles. I will trust the process with those type of teams and say I will grade you in 3 years when we see what the results of this is.
There's tons more draft talk here. What happened on day two? We saw some landing spots for some big names there as well. But when we come back, let's dig into the NBA slate today.
To Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown and Mike Somich on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Ready, Set, Bet here on VSiN. Quick baseball note, the Rockies and Mets game is already postponed, so they are going to play a doubleheader tomorrow. The weather over there in New York said, all right, we're not going to mess with this one. So Rockies and Mets, doubleheader tomorrow, Mike Somich.
Yeah, get two games there. Hopefully it doesn't mess with Aqueduct. We're going to Aqueduct's turf course a little bit later in Pony Up, also in New York. So I'll have to double check to see if we get any additional scratches there.
Uh-oh. Because I've learned some stuff along the way. Some trainers and owners are not going to run their horses on varying sloppy tracks and things like that. Right?
That is correct. Soft turf. Sloppy tracks, not things that ownership groups love to always run their horses on. So I am double checking right now if we have any updates. Looks like we're still fast and firm from Aqueduct. So good sign there from the racetrack there in New York.
So we have a tip off in about 40 minutes between Detroit Pistons, Orlando Magic. This is currently 2.5 in favor of Detroit on the road. 214.5 market low, all the way up to 216.5 market high from a total standpoint here in this one. And boy, Mike, you look at this one, the one seed there, Detroit, just really getting pushed here in this one by Orlando early on. I know Orlando, a very popular team amongst NBA draft NBA heads out there, really loved this team coming into the playoffs, like the way that they were playing and all of that. And I certainly get it. I mean, Cade Cunningham, if Cade Cunningham's like not on the court for the Pistons, they look lost, like absolutely lost out there. And so it's like, this dude is going to have to play like 42 minutes in every game, basically moving forward, because it's like, they get out to a lead when he's out there, and as soon as he comes off to take a breather, boom, you look up and that score is changing. I mean, it is like clockwork.
Yeah, it was interesting because we lost. I've got Detroit futures in the East. Yes. Cade missed some time toward the end of the season, and we saw Jenkins step in, and he played well when Cade was out. And so you were wondering, hey, is this your kind of number two guy who could come in and initiate the offense? That has not been this case here through two games against a Magic team that looked atrocious playing the 76ers in the first playing game, but really is locked in defensively since then. Now, you did see some positive signs for the Pistons in the second half of that game too, where they're able to absolutely just blow out the Magic in the third quarter and then kind of coast to a victory. I do think that was a good thing, but it's really Jalen Duren that you got to keep your eyes on here. He was a walking 20-10 during the regular season. He has really struggled through two games against this interior Magic defense. They have not been able to effectively get the ball to him in positive situations. And he has been, you know, scoring right around. I think he had 11 points in game two. He was sub 10 in game one. He needs to be a bigger part of this offense and insert his will if you want to see this Pistons team that we saw win so many games in the regular season. I do have faith in Detroit today. I think 2.5 is a little bit too short here for a team that, again, looks like they figured something out in the second half against this Orlando defense. And that is how Orlando is going to stay in this game, playing defense. If this Orlando offense has to basically score with Detroit, they're in trouble. I do think Cade and the Pistons get the job done today. So I'll lay it with Detroit here.
Yeah, it is. Like I said, I mean, hats off to the defense there for the Magic. They have figured something out against Detroit. And then you kind of look at the way that they can attack you and different ways as well. I mean, Suggs, Banchero, Wagner doesn't really like blow you away. I know those names aren't sexy or something like that, but the way that those three different guys can go at a defense, it's been difficult for Detroit so far. But I think I'm with you. I think I would only lay it as opposed to take the points, but I'm going to choose to pass here on this one. Our second tip, Oklahoma City and Phoenix. This is 9.5 out there. We have a market low, a 213.5 market high of 214.5. If you look over there, the Thunder minus 125 to win it all. You got to lay money if you want to take the Thunder to win the championship this year, Mike Somich. And, you know, kind of the same conversation I was having about the Celtics. Obviously a very, very good team. Obviously super, super talented. All of those things goes without saying. But has it looked completely dominant in this, despite being up 2-0? Like, hasn't looked, I don't know, exactly, maybe as crisp as I expected. I think maybe I'm splitting hairs here, but I guess I wanted to see a little bit more out of OKC, but I'm not going to lay this one either. I'm going to spectate.
I think it's fair to say that you want to see a little more out of OKC. Honestly, every time I watch OKC, I would like to see a little bit more out of them. They're just not a team that visually blows you away when you've watched them play basketball this year. I don't hate the idea of the Thunder no plus 105. If that's out there, I do think that they're going to have some tough series down the road here. Obviously the Suns not going to be able to put up that much of a fight, but I we'll see what happens. If honestly, the Lakers actually a really good draw, even if they get back Luka and AR-15 there. But this is a Thunder team that I think is going to struggle in the Western Conference Finals as well as the NBA Finals if they're able to make it there. Today, I mean, it would be Thunder pass. This is a game that I don't want any part of, though.
The Knicks and the Hawks. And holy mackerel, do you want to see a city that is hating a sports franchise right now? And that is this Knicks team. Blowing leads, blowing games. They are only 1.5 favorite here over Atlanta in Atlanta. It has gotten up to 2.5 at DraftKings. 0.5 at FanDuel and MGM. flat two Caesars and circa 214.5 to 215.5. Now, Mike, you look up and down this lineup, and the Knicks are on paper unequivocally the better team than the Hawks, and then have found ways to fumble away these games in which now Atlanta leads the series 2-1. I don't know what you do in a pro locker room. I don't know how to give a speech. I don't know what you do when it's you're sitting in there with a whole bunch of guys that are all making eight figures to play the game. But at what point do you just stand in the middle of the room and go, are you kidding me that this team is up 2-1 on us? Like look around the room and look what they have in that locker room over there. Like, are we serious right now? I did lay the 1.5 with the Knicks, assuming some sort of rebound here based solely on nothing more than the fact that they are the more talented team, and I only basically need to win the game. It's 1.5. I only need to basically win the game. Can they not figure out a way to lose? That is basically the question in this.
I would be using some stronger language than what's going on here if I was standing in the middle of that room. Yeah. Here's the problem I have with the Knicks. Outside of Brunson, who do you trust? Who do you actually trust?
Yeah.
It's not Cat. It's not Bridges. It's not OG. Right? It's not Hart. He'll play hard, but you can't actually trust him to be able to score when you need it. That's my problem with this Knicks team, is that you've got a bunch of guys who are, for lack of a better term, kind of flaky at times in the playoffs, and then you've got Brunson. And look, you're right. This is a more talented roster than the Hawks. I don't know if that's going to matter. Like, I don't know if the talent is going to win out over this seven-game series. I played the Hawks before the series started to win it. I'm not going to bet this game because, obviously, I already got a bunch riding on it here. If they win this game and go up 3-1, feel pretty good about the series-long bet. But I kind of feel like the Hawks might just be the better team here despite having less talent.
It is unbelievable to me.
Imagine being a Knicks and Mets fan right now.
Yeah, I mean,
brutal way to have fandom going.
Like,
on.
You're watching this, and I understand it's no secret how, you know, Brunson loves to go to his left and like doesn't really like to go to his right and stuff. But like in these key moments, them not figuring out how to get him to get to where he wants to be on the court to try these shots or be able to run some sort of play to where they have forced him to the right every time that he's needed to make a big shot. Obviously, the air ball to end the game, though, it's. I don't know what's going on out there on the court with these guys where it's like, okay, we've got our star player who's pretty clutch and has been able to make some big shots for us over there, but he really, really doesn't like going to his right. So we got to figure out a way to get him. It was like, Hawks have just pushed him to the right every single time he's taking horrible shots. Like, we've never coached in the NBA, Mike Somich, but like, come on, man, let's get two plays. You got to run two plays that free him up to get the shot that he wants.
You gave up a mint for Bridges. He's got 21 points in 3 games in this series. He did not score last game. Well, like, what are we doing? Like, we got to figure out how to get this to make this work. This is the playoffs. You've had 82 games to figure this out. How are we in this position right now that, you know, Mikal Bridges is supposed to be able to put points on the board? And by the way, like, this should be a great series matchup for the Knicks because they have the wings to defend Atlanta. But if you can't have Bridges out there, it creates a problem on your defense, too. And all of a sudden, McBride's out there in key situations. The Knicks are a mess, man. They're a mess. Maybe they respond today. I hope they do.
As I laid the 1.5 there with this one. Got the sports calendar never stops at the sharp plays. They cover it all. Been winning for 15 straight years. All of it documented, logs posted publicly over at sharpplays.com. So, head on over there when the sharp plays moves. The sports books take notice, respected, watched, and feared. Start winning with them over at sharpplays.com. There is one more game on the slate. We'll talk Denver and Minnesota a little bit later in the show, see if there's anything we like there in that one. But when we come back, some Major League Baseball with Eric Halterman. I can't say for certain. I bet we're the first show to ever have two Haltermans in the same show. Can you think we could say that, like, definitively?
100%.
Okay.
Definitely first show on VEASAN history to have two Haltermans. I would go out on a limb and say first show in the world's history.
I like this. You know what? Since no one can say yes or no, we're going to say we're the first show in history to have two Haltermans. The first Halterman when we come back. We'll be right back.
back to Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown and Mike Somich on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Ready, Set, Bet here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. We did get going over in Major League Baseball. There is a run, three early runs on the board for the Red Sox against the Orioles. So 3-0 Red Sox over the Orioles here, middle of the second inning. So it looks like the Red Sox getting all over Rogers there in that one, who is pulled in this one after 1 2/3 innings. So we will see if that was just due to lack of execution or if there's something going on with Trevor Rogers for the Orioles. That is a one and two thirds usually gets a little bit longer leash than that. Now joining us here on the program, Eric Halterman. You can find his work over at RotoWire at Eric_Halterman over on the Twitter machine. And we have decided that with the Halterman takeover today here on the show, we believe there's somewhere we would find, if we did the whole 23andMe or whatever it is that they do these days, that you guys are definitely long lost cousins.
Oh, for sure. I only know about to my second cousins on the Halterman side, but we got to be fourth or fifth or something.
I like it. We're gonna connect the dots.
Aaron segment.
Yeah, I'm paying for it, Somich. We're gonna connect the dots on this somehow. Whenever we get them back on here, we'll be able to tell them exactly how that all played out. Okay, let's get to the slate today. We said that there's one game already underway, but man, this Cubs team is absolutely surging right now. You're gonna ride the wave.
Yeah, for sure. Cubs, you can get plus money. Cubs at Dodgers. Weird to bet against the Dodgers under most circumstances, but it would be weird not to take the plus money for a team that's riding a 10-game winning streak. Also weird not to take the plus money against Roki Sasaki, who just looks broken, unfortunately. Was really excited to see what he could do coming over from Japan. It was pretty terrible last year, and it's pretty terrible this year, even worse. A 6.11 ERA, a 1.87 WHIP through four starts. The ERA estimators, they're not above 6, but they are generally above 5. A 5.19 xFIP, a 5.08 Sierra. This is just not at all what we expected to see. He doesn't really have any good starts this year. 3 times out of 4, he's failed to reach 5 innings. And the time he did reach 5 innings, that one didn't go well either. His strikeout rate, just 20%. His walk rate all the way up to 14%. Those are actually both better than last year. So there's nothing you can fall back to in his big league track record and say, yeah, I think Roki Sasaki is about to turn it around. And then on the other side, Colin Ray actually looks pretty decent for the Cubs. It's an ERA of 3, a 1.04 WHIP. The ERA estimators aren't that much worse in the mid-3s. He's not a big strikeout guy, but 21% strikeout rate is fine, especially when you compare that with good control, a 5% walk rate, and an elevated ground ball rate as well. And Ray was pretty decent last year. Again, nothing special, but a 3.95 ERA with enough strikeouts and a pretty good walk rate. So Colin Ray, I trust enough to beat Roki Sasaki here, although if you don't think the Dodgers will be stopped by Colin Ray, I think taking the over here is pretty reasonable as well. The Dodgers are first by Team WRC+. The Cubs are second. Both bullpens are banged up too. No Edwin Diaz for the Dodgers for quite some time, and Cubs are missing their closer, Daniel Palencia, as well as a whole bunch of other high-leverage guys in Phil Maton, Hunter Harvey, Caleb Thielbar. So I like the Cubs on the money line here, but I wouldn't mind the over as well.
Yeah, I'm going to co-sign this one. I was shocked that the Cubs were a dog in this game. It was as high as plus 135 earlier this morning. Look, it's not fun betting against the Dodgers. That's the reason you get good prices when you bet against the Dodgers, though. And this is one of those games where it makes a ton of sense to jump aboard. All right, let's leave Dodger Stadium, take the I-10 South to the 405 South to the 5 South, and end up in Anaheim here where we've got the Royals taking on the Anaheim Angels. I got to admit, Cole Reagans is on my fantasy team. I have no idea if it's just time to give up, time to bench him. He has been atrocious this year, and he is on the mound tonight against this Los Angeles Angels team.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd be cutting him yet, but I certainly would be benching him. I don't like what I've seen from Cole Reagans this year, and particularly lately. His last 2 starts, 7 strikeouts against 12 walks. He just walked 8 and gave up 7 runs against the Yankees in his last start. For the season, it's a 6 ERA with a 1.67 WHIP. The ERA estimators generally in the mid-5s. Strikeout rate is down from what it used to be. Still 24% is decent, but not nearly good enough to offset a 20% walk rate. You just can't survive in the majors very long with those kinds of numbers. And this is a guy who missed an extended period with a rotator cuff strain last year. So I worry that this isn't just a poor run of form for Cole Reagans, but his arm might just physically be different than it used to be. So I would like the Angels side, although you could also consider the over here as well. I wouldn't say I trust the Angels starter, Walbert Urena. He does have a 2.35 ERA in three appearances. That's one start, two relief outings, but a 1.83 whip. He's a hard sinker guy, just like his teammate Jose Soriano, who's been the talk of the season so far. Looks like an early Cy Young contender somehow. Both guys throw that hard sinker and don't get as many whiffs as you would expect. Normally, Soriano started to get those. Urena has a decent strikeout rate, 26%, but poor control, a 13% walk rate so far. Gets a ton of grounders, though, a 63% ground ball rate on the season. Last year in the minors, though, he spent most of the year at Double A and wasn't very good. A 4.34 ERA, a 1.36 whip. Again, way too many walks. So you could just take the over. You could also, I think, take the Angels because the Royals offense has been a lot worse than the Angels this year. The Royals are bottom five in team WRC plus. The Angels just sneak into the back of the top 10. So mostly I'm betting against Cole Reagans here, but whether you want to do that as an over or an Angels money line, I think both are reasonable candidates.
Another team that has been red hot to start the season, this Atlanta Braves team, and they get the first start of the year for Zach Wheeler on the Phillies side of things. How are you playing that one?
Yeah, well, I am a Phillies fan, but I am taking the Braves in this one. I think Braves over 4.5 runs is the bet that stands out the most because I'm betting against Zach Wheeler in that first start back from thoracic outlet syndrome. That is just one of the scariest injuries a pitcher can suffer. And even though he's going to be back relatively soon, he suffered that injury late last year. His velocity has been down at least a few ticks in his rehab outings, which means this is not the Zach Wheeler we're used to. The results have generally been pretty poor, 5.85 ERA in five rehab starts. He is striking out a lot of batters, 28%, but all that really tells me is that he's been able to retire Double A hitters with reduced velocity. All right, fine. Can you do that against the Atlanta Braves, who've been very hot, as you said? I'm not so sure about that. Could just take the Braves money line here, but the payout isn't going to be as good as taking the Braves over 4.5 runs. I also don't totally trust Bryce Elder, although he's been quite good this year, a 1.50 ERA, a whip just under one. Strikeouts are a bit above average, which is a new territory for him. The Atlanta offense has been great, third in team WRC+. The Phillies have been 25th, so that could mean we don't even care if Bryce Elder isn't that good. This should still be an easy Atlanta win. Again, though, it's the Atlanta offense against Zach Wheeler that I feel most comfortable with, so I'd be focusing on bets in that range.
The Yankees are headed down to Houston to take on the Astros in a story of two teams going in different directions that both had some preseason hype here. Yankees already with 17 wins. The Astros already with 17 losses. What are you doing in this one?
Yeah, I like the Yankees here. Could take them on the run line to get a slight plus money here. I like the Yankees starter Ryan Weathers a lot more than Mike Burrows. Weathers, somebody who showed some promise for the last few years in Miami, but hasn't quite made good on it until this season, where he's got a 3.18 ERA. The strikeout rate has shot way up to 31%, and he's got a 7% walk rate to go with it. A really strong start for the year for him. His ERA estimators are even better than that 3.18 ERA, a 2.74 XFIP, a 2.91 Sierra. So they really back up how well he's pitched. Whereas on the other side, Mike Burrows, the ERA estimators are going to say he deserves more of a low fours ERA than the 6.75 he has so far, but he has not pitched well. I thought he showed some promise with the Pirates last year, but strikeout rate's down a bit to 21%, pretty average there. Decent enough walk rate, decent enough ground ball rate. He's just kind of a guy at this point. Both offenses are really good, so it's another one where you could look at the over, but I like Ryan Weathers enough that I think betting on the Yankees to win this one by a couple runs makes sense. Also, the Astros bullpen is a mess. Josh Hader's hurt. Brian Abreu's been terrible. So even if they enter the late innings with a lead, when you've got Eniel De Los Santos as your closer, are you really going to hold that lead? I mean, he's been good so far, but how long is that going to keep up? So I like the Yankees in this one.
All right, we got about 30 seconds here. Let's skip down to the Twins and Rays. Going to be fading McClanahan and Ober here, basically.
Yeah, I don't trust either of these pitchers at all. I don't even know how Bailey Ober has a 4.15 ERA. He was terrible last year, and the velocity's down again. It's gone from 91.7 to 90.2 to 88.8 on his fastball. No other qualified starters under 91, and he's under 89. Shane McClanahan, meanwhile, has got a 5 ERA after missing two straight years with injury. He's just not the guy he once was. I don't know why the over-under is so low in this one.
He's Eric Halterman. You can find him over on RotoWire MLB Series Radio as well, at Eric underscore Halterman on the Twitter machine. Appreciate the time and good luck today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys.
We will continue our Halterman takeover here on the show a little bit later as we connect the cousins there in that one. Mike, we'll talk a little bit more about the draft as it rolls on. We'll get that first tip coming over in the playoffs as well. Update everybody on that line before it gets going.